powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Jake and Stacy
on Seattle Sports Station.
Powered by Kitsap Credit Union. Streaming through the Seattle Sports app and at seattlesports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
Happy Monday. Hope you all had a great weekend. Curtis, I know that yours was unique up and down, being at the Mariners game pre and post game, and then also having to take sleep tests and all this unique stuff. And you know, I mean, for some of us, it's pretty benign. Maybe we got our kid's six year birthday party, or some of us got sleep tests.
Yeah, my weekend was ridiculous. I think that's the best way to put it. The most normal thing was doing pre and post yesterday for the Mariners. The craziest thing was Saturday night going into Sunday. I took a sleep test at the hospital because, look, when your wife complains about your snoring as much as mine does, it's time to get it checked out. It's time to start figuring out what's the root cause of this. So I had to do that, but that was one of the most unpleasant experiences I've had in my entire life. Followed that up by Rafael Devers smoking one out to the opposite field on a pitch that no one should make contact with. Right. Made for a very unenjoyable 24-hour stretch.
Well, man, some people are down bad. And, Curtis, I don't think anybody's more down than you are about this. But before we get into all of that, what I will say is that this was a very fun series. This was a very competitive series from the Mariners. Would have wanted to see a series win, no doubt. But they played the Red Sox extremely well. On Friday, I was there at the ballpark with my family. You know, it was a 4-3 loss, came down to the very end, had a chance to come back. Adam Frazier smokes a ball that you thought for sure was going to be the hit that was going to tie this thing up, goes right to Trevor Story. And Saturday, obviously, is the game of the weekend. And I want to jump into that because the Mariners and Red Sox were going back and forth all the way through until the end. Then you get to the bottom of the ninth. Boston's up 6-5. You have Crawford who walks, Suarez who singles to left and gets JP out to second. And then Abraham Toro, who has been much maligned this year for obvious reasons, he just finds a way to come up with big hits. Let's go to cut number three here. Abraham Toro with a big, big RBI double.
The 1-0 pitch. Swing, and this is lashed down the left field line, into the corner. This ball bangs off the top of the wall. Crawford scores easily. Toro is into second base, and Abraham Toro has tied the game at 5 with 2 outs in the bottom of the 7th inning.
So now you have an unlikely hero in Abraham Toro. He ties it up. Okay, great. Then who walks up to the plate? None other than Dylan Moore, who just finds a way in his career, Curtis, to come up with big moments. And here in cut number four, Dylan Moore with his walk-off single to win the game.
And the right-hander's 0-2 pitch on the way to Moore. Swing and a line shot. Left center field. That is down for a base hit, and the Mariners win it. A walk-off single. Dylan Moore. Haggerty scores. What a comeback. The Mariners win it. They win it 7-6 here at T-Mobile Park in the bottom of the ninth inning. And Dylan is getting bobbed out in right field. What a celebration for the Mariners tonight. Series is tied. Center field. Jackie Bradley Jr. diving for it, came up short, and the Mariners get 2 to win it here in the bottom of the ninth. Final score, the Mariners 7 and the Red Sox 6.
Curtis, I was fist pumping, fired up. Couldn't be more fired up for that moment. Was also a little bitter that it couldn't happen on Friday while we were at the game, but happened in front of almost 38,000 people on Saturday. So you know what happened? On Sunday, with a chance to win the series against the Red Sox, almost 43,000 fans show up to T-Mobile Park. The place is rocking, and it was a pitching battle, a pitching duel. And, Curtis, if you were to tell me that Robbie Ray was going to go 7 innings, only give up three hits, no earned runs whatsoever, no runs earned at all, I would have said, I feel really good about the Mariners' chances to walk away with the series win, and unfortunately, that did not happen.
Yeah, yesterday you got the performance that everybody who follows the Mariners, everybody that roots for the Mariners, had been wanting to see of Robbie Ray. And when he has seven shutout innings, you have to do something with that, right? You have to take advantage of that because it has been so few and far between in the 2022 season. And then all of a sudden, Cutter Crawford, a guy who got called up less than 24 hours prior to his start yesterday against the Mariners, goes five innings, only gives up the one hit to Luis Torrens. He gives up a few walks, but still, the Mariners not able to do anything with them. And we're going to talk about this a little bit later, but boy, the offense right now, to me, seems like it's got the biggest issues facing it right now, especially the bottom of the order, which has been one of the biggest problems the entire season for the Mariners. But not being able to put anything across on a guy who had an 8.44 ERA coming into yesterday, that was a bitter pill to swallow. But even with that being said, I still think that the series against Boston is one where you can kind of take some good out of it because it was a team that had your number in a big way earlier in the month of May where they swept you in four games. Every game this weekend was tight. Every game came down to the final innings. And the Mariners, you know, they blinked a little bit on Sunday. Saturday, they were able to fight back after Dahlbeck hits the ninth inning home run. There was some good to come from this, even though they weren't able to pull off a series victory, which would have been their fifth in a row. Jake, right. I want to know, how are you feeling after this series? Are you feeling any worse because of the series loss? Are you feeling better in how they competed and the advancements we saw from Robbie Ray, who's using that sinker, that two-seamer a little bit more, that's producing some really good results? Or are you feeling a little bit of the same as you were prior to the Red Sox series?
Well, going into prior to the Red Sox, I said the Mariners were going to, you know, this was the month of the Mariners, that they were going to turn this thing on. And honestly, I still feel that way because you just have to get through these next two series. And what you're hoping with, and unfortunately, the Minnesota Twins are playing really, really good baseball right now. They're a team that's really playing well. But you just need to get yourself through these next two series against the Red Sox and the Twins and not put yourself in a big hole. And hopefully the Mariners can go and win this series against the Twins. You've just got to get through that because then you go and play the Angels, you play the A's, you play Baltimore, you play the A's again, you play the Angels again. Your schedule lightens up dramatically, you know, starting June 16th, starting this week. So I just felt like this entire time they just needed to get through these next couple series to be able to give themselves a chance to really compete at a high level. It was great to see Robbie Ray have that performance. It was great to see Eric Swanson come back and absolutely dominate the side when he came in on Friday. You know, there were definitely some positives that you could take away from this, but ultimately, Curtis, I just think that this is going to be an uphill battle until you can lengthen your lineup. You point to the offense, and I am right there with you. I totally agree with that. I mean, they were 8-32 with runners in scoring position, so they were 250. Now, Saturday brings that average up dramatically. They were 5-12, and then outside of that, Friday and Sunday, they did not perform well whatsoever with runners in scoring position. And to me, that's more indicative of the type of lineup that they have. And once you get past Suarez, who obviously is the last guy that I feel like can really do some damage in that lineup, then you're looking at a stretch there in your lineup where you have no idea what you're going to get from these guys, and they are hitting. You know, Adam Frazier has not been the same guy as of late. And then you get to 177 with Toro, 238 with Trammell, 213 with Dylan Moore, 231 with Luis Torrens and Cal Raleigh, depending on the night. I mean, it just is, it's too big of a drop off. It's too big of a hole. And it's not good enough. And yeah, I know Jesse Winker had an awesome, you know, bomb on Friday that you watched. go over the fence, but he has not been anywhere close to the player that you were hoping he was. And the fact that he's hitting 206 and he's your leadoff guy, that to me has not been encouraging to watch whatsoever.
No, it hasn't. We'll get into that conversation a little bit later. We're also going to bring on Larry Stone of the Seattle Times, who had a few thoughts on Jesse Winker's performance to start the season, at least on social media last night. So we'll ask him about that. But it just seems to me right now that the best outfield alignment for the Mariners is obviously Julio in center. That is one of your few guys you can sharpie in your lineup every single day. But am I crazy for thinking that Dylan Moore and Taylor Trammell are your best healthy current options right now at the corner outfield spots? Which, if somebody had told you back in March that I would be sitting here saying that, yes, give me Dylan Moore, give me Taylor Trammell as the corner outfield of this Mariners team, would you have thought I need another sleep test on top
yes.
of the one that I just took?
Yes, yes, and the fact that you're clamoring for it, I don't think you're crazy, but I do believe that it's putting you in a position where, look, Jesse Winker isn't giving you much to make you think otherwise, and that to me is the biggest problem. Yeah, he could turn things around, but at what point of the season are you going to stop saying that? At what point in the season are you going to say, well, he can turn things around, he can turn things around? That to me is something that we're all waiting for Jesse Winker to do. We know he's fully capable of doing it, but while he's trying to figure that out, I don't think you need to force the issue by putting him at the leadoff spot. I don't think you need to force the issue by, you know, putting him in the lineup every single day. You know, Taylor Trammell and Dylan Moore have the ability, I think, and to your point that, you know, I don't want to see them be everyday starters, but I think, you know, matched up in the right circumstances, they can be effective for you. And certainly they have been just fine in comparison with Jesse Winker. I don't think there's been that big of a drop off between those names, which is the biggest disappointment of the season thus far, I believe. So I really look at this offense really being the thing that they have to find a way to get through. They have to find a way to keep scratching and clawing, Curtis, to get by, so that when this lineup can truly get healthy and it can be lengthened with Kyle Lewis and with Mitch Haniger, and eventually, hopefully, you have a renewed, you know, Jared Kelnick at the end of the season, that you're looking at an entirely different lineup. But until then, they have to take advantage of runners in scoring position, and so far, that has not been the strength of this team. All right, we're gonna dive into this and much, much more. We've got a great show dialed up for you. Excited to talk to Larry Stone at 11 o'clock. But let's get to Headline Rewrites, brought to you by Tila Mortgage.
Extra, extra, read all about it.
Headline Rewrites.
Presented by Tila Mortgage.
The real story behind the headlines in today's news with Jake and Stacey.
All right. First up, we have Steph Curry's historic 43-point performance saved the Warriors from a 3-1 deficit against the Celtics and tied the NBA Finals at 2 games apiece. What's the real headline?
Real headline is this: Golden State is the only team to go from a super team to just Superman. Steph Curry, 43 points on the road in a situation where Boston could have taken a commanding 3-1 series lead. Backs against the wall. That's what super duper stars do. That's what guys who are in the pantheon of NBA greats, that's what they do in those kinds of moments. And Steph Curry with maybe the signature performance of his NBA career.
Yeah, no question. And if they go on to win, this will absolutely be that signature moment, Curtis, that you just talked about. And look, there are moments for every superstar where they get their legacies defined as to what type of players they are. And, you know, for a good chunk of Steph Curry's championships, who was there? Who was the player that rivaled Steph Curry as the best player on the team?
It was always KD.
Exactly. It was Kevin Durant. So now this is fully Steph Curry's team. And does he have enough juice, enough firepower, enough will to be able to put together a winning performance to, you know, really be able to put the team on his back? And I think that's one thing that he has not been able to fully notch on his belt yet. And when it comes to the NBA Finals, not in his career, not in games, not in the playoffs, but in his NBA Finals career. And when you talk about adding to the legend of Steph Curry, these are the types of moments that absolutely do that. And I'll be curious if they can take it all the way home from here, because this was a big, big momentum swing for the Warriors. But Curtis, I do have to say that I've been pretty impressed with Boston and how well they've been able to play in these finals.
Yeah, Boston has actually been playing really well away from Boston. They have had a record in the playoffs this year that is just around 500 at the Garden there in Boston. So maybe this is a team better built for the road, but boy, when you're given that opportunity at home, when you're given a chance to go up 3-1 in front of your own home crowd, you never want to squander that, because those opportunities are few and far between. And now, if they are going to win the NBA Finals, if the Celtics are going to bring home that 18th title, they've got to go into Golden State again and pick up at least one victory along the way, maybe even two, who knows. But it just seems like it's a much more uphill battle for the Celtics than it is for the Warriors. And the Warriors, with that win on Saturday, were able to regain home court advantage in the NBA Finals, because two of the three remaining games are in San Francisco.
Headline Rewrites.
All right. In interviews with Heavy.com, Sports Illustrated, and Field Goals, Chris Carson remains hopeful about his chances of playing football again after suffering a season-ending neck injury in 2021. What's the real headline?
Real headline is this: while great to hear, this decision is ultimately out of Chris Carson's hands. So he can say whatever it is he wants about his health and how he wants to return to the game, but if he fails a physical, there's no chance the Seahawks keep him around, which is unfortunate, because it's not something that he really has control of. It's just, how is his body responding to the surgeries that he had in order to fix that neck issue? Jake, I don't know if you saw it, but there was a picture online circulating of what that procedure that Carson had in order to, like, fuse his neck back together, basically. It was intense looking. Not something for the faint of heart.
No, definitely not. And the fact that he wants to get back and play football with that type of surgery, I mean, it's just, it just speaks to the toughness of Chris Carson. And that's what kills me the most, is that this is such a great individual. This is a great player. This is somebody who works extremely hard, and they potentially could have their career cut short because of something, as you mentioned in your headline rewrite, that's completely out of Carson's hands, right? These types of injuries out of his hands. And unfortunately, you can't work hard through this to be able to get yourself back. It takes time, and unfortunately, time is not a friend to Chris Carson. We don't know if we'll ever see him hit the football field, but what I believe Chris Carson's mindset should be is that this should be in the long haul. This should not be a snapshot view of the here and now, because if you're looking at the here and now, I am very confident in saying that I don't believe that Chris Carson is going to get cleared.
Yeah,
just all the rhetoric, everything about it, it does not give me confidence whatsoever. And if he's going to hit the field, Curtis, it's not going to be in 2021. It could maybe be in 2022, possibly, but there's a long, long way to go.
Well, and just seeing how everybody's kind of talking about Chris Carson, not Carson himself, but like everybody talking about him. We heard Pete Carroll kind of speak in, it sounded like, the past tense, maybe. Trey Flowers, former Seahawk defensive back who is on the Bengals right now, he tweeted this morning, he said, "Chris Carson, you've been the GOAT, brother, praying for you, bro. You popped in my mind. Love." And then the fingers crossed emoji. Obviously, Trey is a lot closer to Chris than any of us in the media are, because Trey played with Chris for so long. I would imagine he's got a lot more intel on this as to why he's tweeting the way he is about Carson. Stuff like that, I mean, you love to see the support that is, as you know, enveloped Carson over the last few weeks, over the last few months. But stuff like that does not make me hopeful about his return. Well, but obviously I'm rooting for it.
Yeah, obviously you're rooting for it. But here's the thing, though, too, Curtis. Let's say everything goes well, and obviously, you know, fingers crossed, like Trey Flowers said, that he can get cleared. But even if he is cleared, Curtis, what confidence do you have that he is going to remain healthy and that they're not going to have to be in a position where they really, really manage his carries and his workload? And obviously that's why they went and drafted Ken Walker. But it just, that's why it makes me really, really doubt the idea that he is going to get cleared, because that means that the team is then going to feel comfortable carrying him on the roster, knowing that he could very easily re-injure himself again. That's just a tough position for the organization to be in.
Headline Rewrites.
For the third straight year, the Tampa Bay Lightning will play in the Stanley Cup Finals after beating the Rangers 4-2. What's the real headline?
Real headline, 1 year into covering the NHL and we're already tired of the Lightning. 3 straight Eastern Conference titles. They've won 2 cups in a row, going for their third. I mean, it is a historic run, no doubt. We haven't seen a team do this in, 40 years since the New York Islanders did it back in the early 80s? Jake, look, hats off to Mike Lefko and his Tampa Bay Lightning, but I'm already tired of it.
Yeah, I look, the person that would hear this headline rewrite and be extremely upset, and not even upset, I think just disappointed knowing Mike Lefko, just really disappointed.
Just seething.
I'm sorry, Mike, but the Tampa Bay Lightning, they've had their run of success. It's over. It's time for somebody else, okay? And, you know, Curtis, why do we always do this? Why do we always get to the point where if you see one team enough have that run of success, be able to get themselves a championship after championship after championship, why do they always become the person that everyone roots against? Why is that?
Persona non grata. I think just as the headline rewrite said, we're just tired of it. We want to see some new blood out there. I will say, though, this is going to be a really good Stanley Cup Finals because the Colorado Avalanche may be more talented than Tampa Bay, which would be quite the series, or at least hopefully it lives up to the billing, because I think this is going to be the most competitive Stanley Cup final Tampa Bay has had of the three. But yeah, I mean, when I look at teams like Tampa Bay and teams like Colorado and then also like Edmonton and the Rangers and all these other teams that made deep runs into the playoffs this year, it feels like they're playing an entirely different sport than the Kraken are. Like, it is night and day different than what Seattle played this year. And yeah, this was year one for the Kraken. Obviously, they were going to have plenty of wrinkles, and they weren't going to be a well-oiled machine, or at least that's... we were told otherwise, but we were the fools for believing that.
Everyone was the fools for believing that. I mean, everybody was on that. We just got a text from Mike Lefko. He said, "I'm really disappointed. Don't hate the greatness." Sorry, Mike. We had to do it, buddy. It's Jake and Stacey. You're listening to Seattle Sports Station on 710 and the Seattle Sports app. Don't go anywhere because I've got 3 Seahawks that have a lot of work to do to get themselves right before training camp. I'm going to tell you who they are coming up next.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studio, this is Seattle Sports Station. You're listening to Jake and Stacey.
Powered by Kitsap Credit Union.
All right, welcome back. This is Jake and Stacey. Obviously, this is not Stacey's voice. Jake keeps filling in.
No, it's me, Stacey.
As the lead today.
We got hey guys.
Curtis Rogers joining me.
No, this is totally Stacey.
Oh, really? That's totally Stacey. Just a little bit higher, you know, in your octave there. Maybe you might get to Stacey. And then we got Brady behind the glass helping produce and run the board for us. So we are going to do our best to carry the workload that obviously Stacey brings to the team, and not easy to do. But in the meantime, though, we've got a really fun conversation. I told you I've got 3 Seahawks that I believe still have a lot of work to do before training camp. So now you get in this period of the offseason, Curtis, where you've got OTAs, you mandatory minicamp. The Seahawks did it very uniquely where they did mandatory minicamp a week early. So now there is still one last week of OTAs. A lot of the veterans are not going to participate in that, but you better believe it. Anybody that's on a roster bubble guy, a rookie, guys that have stuff to prove, I'm sure Geno Smith and Drew Locke are going to, you know, be there this last week. But that's really what you have. And from there, you then go to vacation. It's vacation. You've got time, 6 weeks off until you get to training camp. Now, Curtis, let me tell you from experience, that's not time off. That is time to get your body right, to get your mind right, to get in peak physical condition and mental condition, because training camp comes fast and you've got to perform from day one for a lot of these guys. And being in that position, Curtis, there were no days off. You know, it was really, you know, making sure that you're dialed in and focused. And for a lot of these guys, that is the mentality that they have to have. So are you ready for me to tell you who those guys are?
I am, but also with that, with you saying you can't really take time off when it's your vacation, that's part of the reason why I would have never made in the NFL. You give me 6 weeks off, I'm taking 6 weeks off, folks.
Well, let me tell you a story. My rookie year, before we get into this, my rookie year, we were with the Jets, and Bryce Petty was a fourth-round draft pick, and he came back. We all went off 6 weeks. I trained, you know, trying to get myself ready to go, all that, and Bryce Petty literally took 6 weeks of vacation.
My guy.
Like, this guy did not, he did not get it at all. Had no clue. Like, I was blown away. He showed up, and still, Bryce Petty's a really, like, in shape, physically gifted, talented guy. But he showed up at, like, 250 pounds. And I mean, he was, like, 10 pounds overweight from where he normally is, and like, was so... Just what do you mean? We were supposed to train? I mean, we had vacation, right? Like,
missed that memo, guys.
Just totally didn't understand it and get it. Oh, man, I'll never forget that. But for a lot of players, a lot of young guys, they really don't understand that. And it's something that they have to learn and grow through. But the three players, Curtis, right off the bat, number one, without a doubt, is Drew Lock. Drew Lock is the player that I believe has the most work to do before entering training camp. Why? Well, let's listen to cut number 11, Pete Carroll, talking about the quarterback competition and emphasizing that Geno Smith, he's got the edge right now.
They've been really impressive, and it's not been, you know, any one sequence here or one day here. They have just been solid throughout. We've shared a ton of reps. Geno's gone with the first group throughout, but they've had very close to equal reps in situational opportunities throughout. They really have been very impressive. So I'm, you know, I can't tell you anything other than that they've done a terrific job so far. They look in control. Geno's still ahead. You can tell that. But it's not going to be too much for Drew to be caught up by the time we get through camp. He'll be there.
So when you talk about that, Pete Carroll just saying flat out that, look, Drew Lock was running with the twos. Geno Smith was running with the ones. Geno's got the edge. And then he gives that caveat that he doesn't have, you know, Drew Lock, you know, doesn't have that much to go to be able to catch up to Geno Smith. Well, guess what, Curtis? In these 6 weeks, he's got to catch up. He's got to catch up to Geno Smith, and it's by through the playbook and by being better at mastering your craft in regards to your eyes and your feet and how they correlate to the particular play. What Drew Lock is to me, Curtis, is he is a wild card type of player. He can make plays. He can make plays off schedule. He can make throws into tight windows being late because he's got such a strong arm. He has to learn to be able to play on time and in rhythm and to do it at a higher level, because that's what Geno Smith is going to be providing for this team, and he's going to have that level of comfort for this organization because he knows the playbook. He's going to operate within the system. Now, if Drew Lock can match that, I believe he has the talent to go beyond with his playmaking ability.
I think with Drew Lock, he has the higher ceiling of the two quarterbacks right now between him and Geno Smith. But also, as we've talked about a lot, has the longest way to go in terms of getting there and in terms of getting the offense down and in terms of beating Geno Smith out. And, yeah, these next few weeks before training camp start are going to be of vital importance to him in order to make those leaps necessary in order to win the starting quarterback job. Do I think it's impossible for him to do it right now? No, I don't think it's impossible. But I do think that Pete Carroll is leaning heavily towards Geno Smith being the starting quarterback in week one simply because of the familiarity of the offense, the familiarity with Pete because Geno's been in the system for the last couple of years. And really, there's no other quarterback right now that's quote-unquote available, at least available in the way the Seahawks would like them to be, which is via free agency. The Seahawks are not making a trade for a quarterback. We can end that thought. We should have ended that thought months ago when they weren't even biting at Baker Mayfield. They're not going to trade for a quarterback. So if one becomes available via free agency, then we can have that conversation. But right now, it is Geno's job to lose, and Drew's got quite a ways to make up.
No, he really does. I mean, I genuinely believe at this point, you know, this is something where Drew Lock really has to go above and beyond in his career to be able to get him to the point where he can overtake Geno Smith. And it has nothing to do with the fact that Geno Smith is poised and ready to have an all-pro year, Curtis. I just really, truly believe it comes down to Pete Carroll and the comfort of knowing that you have a quarterback that has been in your system, been in your scheme, and can play the style of football that he wants, which is to limit the amount of turnovers and to be able to be in a situation where Shane Waldron doesn't feel completely limited in the style of offense that they want to run from a package perspective, from a tempo perspective. And with Drew Lock, you may have to dial it back a little bit because he is not as familiar with the playbook. And I think that that's a very real thing that Drew Lock is having to overcome. And we're not even talking about on-field performance. So what I do believe is nice, though, for Drew Lock is that he can make up for some of the things that he is falling short of, just familiarity with the playbook by... You get into training camp, you get into preseason games, you get these opportunities. And Curtis, if he drives down the field and he's consistently, you know, putting the team in position to score, well, guess what? There is that open competition where he can prove himself through those preseason games that he should be the starter over Geno Smith. And that's why I believe right now, if you're just going to practice, Geno Smith is going to have the upper hand. If you're talking about, you know, on-field performance and in-game, that's where I do think that Drew Lock has the ability to catch up to him, and that's why this is going to be a fascinating quarterback battle that we are going to watch. All right, I know we didn't get to 2 and 3. That's because we've got that's the ultimate tease. That's radio for you.
We've still got a bunch of more hours to go.
We do, and we will have 2 and 3 ready to go for you coming up very, very soon in the next hour. So don't go anywhere. Stay tuned. I will tell you who the other two Seahawks that still have a lot of work to do before training camp. But number one, obviously, is Drew Lock. It's Jake and Stacey. You're listening to Seattle Sports Station on 710 and the Seattle Sports app. There is an experiment going on with the Mariners, and they have tried it, and it needs to end. We are going to tell you what that is after the break.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studio, this is Seattle Sports Station. You're listening to Jake and Stacy.
Powered by Kitsap Credit Union.
All right, Stacey Ross is out. She is out celebrating a wedding. So in the meantime, Curtis and I are holding it down with Brady behind the glass. Friday is June 17th, which is Star Wars Fireworks Night at T-Mobile Park, the first of 7 fireworks shows this year. Tickets are on sale now at mariners.com/fireworks. I always love going to those games. The fireworks shows afterwards, they do an amazing job with them. Curtis, we talked about the Mariners doing an experiment that needs to end now. And it's not the fireworks show. It has nothing to do with the fireworks show after. So don't worry about that. We're not talking about ending the fireworks show. What we are talking about, though, is a particular player who is leading off for this team and a player who, in Jesse Winker, was supposed to come in and mean an awful lot to this club, and so far it has not come together the way that we were all hoping it would.
No, it hasn't even come close to what we had all hoped Jesse Winker's addition to this team was going to be for them in 2022. Moving him to the leadoff spot, everybody thought, or at least the Mariners were hoping, that that was going to unlock what had been plaguing him for the first month and a half of the season, and it has not helped. He is batting .191 out of the leadoff spot. He does have a .329 on base percentage, which is the highest of any spot in the batting order he's been at this season. But it is still more of the same for Jesse Winker as the leadoff guy for the Mariners. And now, look, people can still have belief that he'll figure it out at some point this season, but we are about a month away from the All-Star game. About a month and a week away from the All-Star game, which is, I believe, scheduled for July 19th in L.A. At what point is this who Jesse Winker is for the 2022 season? Because we're going on month 3 now of Winker performing this way, and I have a hard time believing that that long of a slump is just a slump. I have a hard time believing that because it is extending beyond just the simple measures of what we would consider a slump to be, you know, a week or 2 weeks or 3 weeks. This is month three now. And even in spring training, he didn't perform all that well in the month of March. So it has not just been limited to a couple weeks here and there. This has been the entire season. And that's why I feel like I'm ready now to see him at least take a few days off. Sit the bench, get some pinch-hitting opportunities, let Dylan Moore, Taylor Trammell, and Julio Rodriguez man the outfield, because right now those three guys are your best options in the outfield.
Well, Curtis, my question is, when you say, look, Jesse Winker, they were hoping that they would get something out of him by putting him in the leadoff spot. What is that? What do you think that was that they felt like if we put him in this place that he will do better than what he has done before?
Well, it's a familiarity thing for him, because in his time in Cincinnati, he batted out of the leadoff spot more than any other spot in the batting order and had a lot of success. Prior to this season, his OPS out of the leadoff spot was over 900. It has dropped down to 855 after this stretch for the Mariners atop their lineup. He's hit more home runs out of the leadoff spot than any other position in the order in his major league career. He's hit 24 batting first in the order. His next highest is 16th batting second in the order. So there was opportunities for him, or maybe the Mariners were hoping that was going to unlock something within him to get that production that we saw, to get that production that they traded for, really. I mean, Larry Stone pointed this out on social media, and we can talk to him about that when he comes on with us in about 10 minutes or so. But looking at Jesse Winker's numbers to this point last year in the same amount of games through 59 games, I mean, it is night and day difference, like actual night and day difference. His OPS this year, 617. Last year through 59 games, it was 1045. He had 17 home runs, 41 RBIs, 12 doubles. He hit 343 through the season's first 59 games a year ago, and maybe that was due in large part to playing at Great American Ballpark, which is an incredible hitter's ballpark. This year he's hitting 206. He's got a 314 on base. He has got more walks this season than he did a year ago, but four home runs, 24 RBIs. It has not been there for him at all, and at some point, if the Mariners are serious about contending in 2022, and we haven't heard from anybody that they're taking their foot off the gas pedal, this is a team that still is competitive and still wants to be in these races.
Yeah,
then you got to do something. You got to do something about guys who are underperforming, because you can't sit back and say it's bound to happen. Because if you sit, like, you got to have somebody in your lineup that's producing day in and day out. Right now, it's not Winker, who's giving you negative value in terms of WAR.
Right. And well, and somebody else that has done well in the leadoff spot in tradition past has been J.P. Crawford. And that's why I think that if Jesse Winker isn't doing it, Adam Frazier isn't the one that is, you know, inspiring a lot of confidence at the current moment, then it's got to be J.P. Crawford. And let J.P. be your leadoff guy and have it be J.P., Ty France, and Julio Rodriguez. I would move Suarez up to the four hole. I would not continue to keep him at the five spot. And you just got to go from there. I really, really hope that we do see that change, because it has really gotten to the point, Curtis, where you're looking at, from a lineup perspective, truthfully, you're looking at 7, 8, 9, and 1 as really kind of dead spots in your lineup, which is just not the place that you want to be. You know, when you're talking about your lineup and sustainability and being able to score with runners in scoring position, you can't have that be the case. So I think that this team is definitely searching for an answer offensively to draw some consistency. And I get why they did the Jesse Winker experience leading off. But right now, I think that they've got to end that experiment and they've got to find another solution, another answer to be able to help get him back on track. And maybe sitting him for a couple days may be the answer, or maybe, you know, putting him in more of a rotational role at the moment. But I don't think that they can overly rely on Jesse Winker at the current moment. All right, it's Jake and Stacy. You're listening to Seattle Sports Station on 710 and the Seattle Sports app. Larry Stone of the Seattle Times is going to help us assess where the Mariners are right now. And also, in four down territory, I'm going to tell you which Seahawk intrigues me the most following OTAs. That's all coming your way next.